This is 88.5 KRFY in Pondere. And you're with The Morning Show. I'm Phil Huff with host Julie Calamine.
Morning, Phil.
And today in the studio, we have a special guest. Julie, do you want to introduce our guest?
Well, sure. I'd like to introduce Michelle Murfree, and she's with us. We're so happy to have her. She's the coordinator from the Edible Schoolyard Gardens. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning. Thank you for having me here today.
Oh, and it's a great day to have you here. We've got lots to talk about with the school gardens. But first, Phil, let's you and I catch up for a moment.
Yeah, let's do. It was a great Earth Day weekend, wasn't it, Julie?
It sure was. Beautiful weather, lots to do. One thing that happened last week was KRFY's Adopt a Highway cleanup. We had five volunteers, Phil. It worked out really well. We cleaned up 2 miles of highway from Dufort Road on Highway 95 up to the Sagal Fire Department. It was pretty fun, and we got a lot done.
That's a great way to celebrate the birthday of Earth. I went out on a trail project. We went up Regal Creek and Morris Creek and cleared a couple miles of trail on each. It was just wonderful. And I went home and celebrated by planting some peas in the garden.
Your work sounds tougher than picking up the highway garbage, Phil. I bet you're tired.
Well, the peas in the garden were fun, and the extra bonus point were about 9 morels in the side yard. So
let's talk morels for just a minute. I've also found a few in my yard, a few on my road, a few here and there. I haven't hit the big bonanza bushel of morels yet. Have you? You haven't done that either quite yet, it sounds like.
No, we haven't gone out looking in the burned areas.
True.
But I know people who have.
They're finding lots, aren't they?
They sure are.
That's great.
So what's the weather doing today, Julie?
Okay, well, current weather is Sandpoint is today we're looking for a high of 63 degrees, pretty partly sunny, a low tonight of 38. Tomorrow Wednesday, we'll also have a similar forecast, 64 degrees. A low 40, and also partly a little sun, a little rain, and then Thursday we're looking at mostly sunny with a high of 65. So it looks like the week is a little on and off, some clouds, some sun, a little rain possible. That's all right.
Well, it's good for growing. It's the growing season, spring is.
I'd say so. Well, shall we move on to a great interview with Michelle?
Go ahead. Why don't you introduce Michelle?
Okay. Well, once again, Michelle is the coordinator for the Edible School Garden Project, and she's here today to tell us about the school gardens, the elementary school gardens. Good morning again, Michelle.
Good morning.
Well, Michelle, why don't you just tell us a little bit about the school garden story and its history?
Okay. Yeah, and I also want to thank KRFY. KRFY has been a supporter of the garden since the very beginning. I sent a random email to Jim Healy just saying, do you want to talk about school gardens before anybody really knew what we were doing at Northside where we started? And he said, absolutely. So I've been on the air here, I think, every year since we started the garden. So thank you so much for your support. So, yeah, we started in 2010, and it was a friend of mine, Gail Burkett, who is a member of the Bonner County Gardeners Association, you know, at a party said, why don't we start a school garden? And I thought, well, you know, maybe a couple girls will join, or I didn't really think much of it and thought this isn't going to take very much time because I had just retired. And the first day that we started at Northside, there was 30 kids that showed up, all different ages, all different types of personalities, and then since then, it has just taken off. So I don't know if you saw in the Daily Bee that we put a garden last week at Sagal Elementary. So we've got, I think that was our 7th garden. We've got one more elementary school to go, and we'll have a garden at every single elementary school in the Lake Pondere School District.
That's a wonderful expansion into the south side of the lake. It's nice to see things growing
in
Sagal.
Right. And so I've got an application pending, a grant application, to see if we can put in one at Southside this spring as well. And there's also one at the charter school. So it's just been a hugely successful, really fun project and a really, really beneficial project for the kids.
So how many gardens are there in total now?
I think Sagal was 7. So
wonderful.
Yeah. So it's just been great for the kids. I mean, they have teamwork. You know, they're eating healthy. I hear kids yelling, you know, I love kale. And, you know, you get to them early before they, you know, get addicted to sugar or whatnot. And it's in the school lunches and snacks. So the school district has been hugely supportive, too. I mean, the director of nutrition, Bobby Coleman, and Matt Deal, who is the maintenance director, they have been very patient with us coming in and, you know, putting in gardens on their school grounds. So just overall, it's been a hugely positive program. And that's what I wanted when I started the program, is I can't remember what was going on, but it just seemed that there were so many negative things going on. I just wanted to create a project that was completely positive for the community and for the kids. So
tell us a little bit more about how that vision began, how your interest began and really got things rolling.
Right. It was at Lois White's house. She had Peaceable Kingdom, which I'm sure a lot of people know Lois, one of my very best friends. And so she would have cookie exchanges and we would all get together and chat and whatnot. And so that's where the idea was started. And so we met at Northside. It was myself, Gail, the kindergarten teacher, and Jill, who was a parent. And we were sitting in the kindergarten room in the little tiny, you know, chairs. And so we just thought, you know, let's send out an invitation to the kids and see who shows up. And so I was surprised how many kids showed up. And then we just had like two mounds where we grew lettuce. The first year we grew over 100 pounds of lettuce. The school actually ran out of salad dressing because the kids were eating so much salad. So, and it was funny, the first day we were, we had garden club, our very first day at Northside, we met where the kids were getting onto the bus, and there was a lot of kind of snickering going on about, oh, it's the garden club, you know? And then, so we put in all the school classrooms, little plants in, you know, pots, and then when they started to grow, and there was all this greenery in all the windows, then it was like, the garden club, they were the coolest club in town, so... So, yeah, so then after that, it was such a success, excuse me, at Northside. Then I wrote a grant. Well, we were funded by Cal and PAFE at Northside. What I was meaning to say is we started out with just two mounds where we grew lettuce. And now at Northside, with the help of our community, we have 18 raised beds. We have a hoop house. It's all on an automatic watering system. And then we have a white picket fence around it from Home Depot.
So each year it seems to build and grow a little bit more on itself. But
right.
In the beginning, that almost sounds like a call for kids that I'm sure you coordinated with the schools. Tell us how that relationship got going.
Right. Brenda Woodward was the volunteer coordinator for the Lake Pend Oreille School District. So she really was our liaison between just our little committee and the mm-hmm. school district. And we went to Bobby Coleman to make sure that if we grew the food that the kids could eat it. And she was so supportive of the project. She said, fine, as long as it's grown organically and as long as the kitchen staff preps it, then you can serve it in school lunches and snacks. So we would have fresh Fridays. We would have a lettuce, you know, kind of a salad bar. And yeah, so it's just been, you know, they've been hugely supportive of it.
So tell us more about the we. It takes a lot of hands to do something like this and,
right.
and some organization. So
right.
what's the organization or organizations
behind
really it all? That's
a really good question. When we first started out, it was pretty much Gail was running Northside and I was helping her. And then I wrote a grant to Equinox for the charter school and for Kootenai School. So I was running around like a crazy person trying to do all these gardens. And then the Bonner County Garden Association, I can't send out enough kudos to them. They have, they were formerly the master gardeners. They have a gardener assigned to every single school to help the teachers. We were doing after-school garden clubs at first, but now it's actually part of the curriculum. So if it wasn't for that association, this would not be a sustainable project. I mean, they have just been awesome stepping up. So they go into the classrooms and, you know, do lessons with the teachers and with the kids, and then they're assigned to the garden. So they are expert gardeners, and they've really just taken this over. So they've been a huge part.
So it's really local, homegrown. Are there any ties to any regional or national organizations?
No, not really. That's a really good question. That's something I think we should look into.
Are there others doing this sort of independently elsewhere that maybe you could find some power of community together with?
Yeah, you know, I spoke with one woman who wrote a book. I think it was, I'm forgetting the title, but she included our little Sandpoint Gardens in it. And she was saying that there's a lot of gardens on the West Coast and the East Coast, a lot of school gardens, but in between, there really isn't. So we're kind of unique in what mm-hmm. we're doing. But that sounds like more work.
Yes. Yeah. I, coming from Minnesota, I didn't see too many in the Twin Cities. So I think you are unique.
Right, right. Yeah. And I just got a call from a school in Bonner's Ferry about wanting to put in a garden. So we are spreading a little bit, but it would be exciting to see if there are other, you know, communities that are doing this and, you know, maybe if people that want to do it, because we have written so many grants. So we have that and we kind of have the blueprint and we're developing a curriculum you know, for each teacher so we could share. That would be incredible if this could spread even beyond Sandpoint. I'd never thought about that before.
Well, it almost sounds like a weed that could take off and spread everywhere.
I know.
But what a great weed.
Yeah.
And I really like the combination of the schools with the master gardeners, because they tend to be people that might be, you know, they're not always older, but they often are a little bit older, and then they can work with the children.
Right.
I bet that's a nice working
group. It really is. And it's really fun when we put in a garden, too, because I have to talk about the Elks. They have funded the last three gardens for me. They've given me $2,000 for each garden. And so they all come out. I don't know if you saw the picture on the cover of the Bee where, you know, there's just a lot of folks out there. And, you know, they're just, it's such a joy to interact with these kids and see them. We had 11 yards of soil, you know, and I thought this is going to take us all day to get this in there. You know, it doesn't look like much until you start like the first shovel. And so then the sixth graders came out and helped us. And I think that we got that shoveled into the six new beds within about a half an hour.
So are the students doing most of the work, or are some of these other community organizations turning out volunteers to assist?
When they're actually planting the garden?
Well, some of the harder work, like just putting together the beds and bringing in the soil and beyond planting, there's a lot of work to a garden.
Yeah, putting it in, and the Elks have been doing that. So they put it all together. At first, my husband was doing it, so he's quite relieved that someone else is doing it, so...
That leads to another question. Is it all volunteers, or are there any paid staff in this
organization? No, it's just all volunteers.
Wow, that's a lot of commitment. It's great.
Yeah. And it's just been a great project for the community, too, to just do something really positive. I mean, they have really stepped up, a lot of businesses. I mean, one day the manager of Walmart just walked in unsolicited to Northside and said, here's $1,000 for your garden club. And Home Depot has been great all seasons. You know, it's just like sometimes it's like people are giving me so much. It's like, you know, I've got grant money. I can pay for this. So,
unusual, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think they really, really enjoy being a part of this.
So if somebody listening wants to help, if they want to come out and help shovel some topsoil or other fun stuff or make a contribution, how do they get in touch with you, or how do they do that?
I would contact the school district. The office on Triangle Avenue, I believe it is. So just the main school district. We have volunteers when we are actually putting in the garden. And then the master gardeners, or the Bonner County Gardeners Association, is in charge of actually planting with the children and whatnot.
Sure. All right. Do you look for materials or supplies to be donated? Or?
We do. Yeah. Okay. So I would call the school district, too.
Okay.
We have supplies. So.
Things like gardening equipment, things like that? Or
gardening equipment, seeds, anything like that. And then we've also, you know, worked with the library with their seed saving.
Oh, yes.
Project.
We've talked with them recently. They're great.
Right. That's a great project. And so we've donated some of our seeds to that as well. And then we also share our food with the community, and we usually plant a row for the food bank. And that's the kids' decision. I mean, like the volunteers, the adults that are there are, you know, to guide them, but not certainly to say, this is what we're going to do. So it's the kids' decision to say, okay, we want to plant a row for the food bank.
So do you foresee a day when the schools themselves might have a seed library? As an extension of their library services?
Well, we do save our own seeds so that we can be sustainable. We do have, you know, once we put in the garden, we spend that money. Mm-hmm. We do have a nice little nest egg at the school district, thanks to Vicki Reich at Idaho Poor Authority. She had a bike. She won a bike from Greasy Fingers. I think it was in the fall, wasn't it? Did you see that? Because she had raised so much money for CHAFE. And she decided, I really like my older bike. And so she called me and said, I want to donate my bike. I think it was worth $1,700. And we came on the air. And on the air, she said, you know, I want to raise at least, she was going to donate the proceeds to the garden club. So she said, I want to raise at least enough money to cover the value of the bike. And I thought, oh my goodness, how are we ever going to do that with little, you know, $10 tickets? But we ended up raising $2,300, and so that's kind of like our pool to keep our garden project sustainable. But that'll last years for us.
What a great holistic way to plan. If you're just tuning in, this is 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported radio for North Idaho. And you're on The Morning Show with Phil and Julie, and today's our guest is Michelle Murphy from the School Garden Project. And I want to carry this thought a little bit further. Do you have any programs for the homeschoolers?
Ooh, You're adding to my to-do list, Bill.
I am. I know. Volunteers have a dangerous time around
me.
I know.
That's an interesting idea. I've never considered that. I wonder how that would work.
I could see something with the community garden and maybe a special plot that's managed by the school garden folks.
I'll have to talk to the community garden folks about that. That could be really fun.
What got me thinking is this idea of integrating it not just as an activity, but into the curriculum. And how do we do that in an effective way in an area that's rural and has many different kinds of learning systems and different kinds of schools?
Right. I think that someone just told me that the Waldorf is putting in a school garden here coming up really soon. But there's other things. I think one person asked me, I think he was the leader for one of the Boy Scout troops, like, I'd like to put in a garden for my troop. So there's all different kinds of, here I am thinking like, I only have one more school to go south side and then this project is going to be done. And now you're giving me some more ideas here, Phil.
Volunteers' work is never done. That's right. Well, Michelle, I'm interested in what kids participate. Is it all kids, every grade? Who's helping with the gardens?
Yeah, it depends on what teacher wants to take it on. At Northside, that's the only one that has an after-school garden club, and that's any student that would like to participate, and the parents participate as well if they're interested in. I think at Washington and Kootenai, I believe it's the fourth graders in the spring, they'll go and plant the garden. And what we've found is that we plant fall, when the crops that'll be harvested in the fall, because during the summertime, people don't have the interest, they're busy, they have soccer, whatnot. So the gardens were kind of getting out of hand. So the fourth graders will plant the garden, learn about that, the soil, whatnot. And then when they come back as fifth graders, then they'll harvest the produce.
What sort of things do they like? Are they the ones who choose the seeds?
Pretty much. Sometimes it's like when I was at Sagal, I said, what do you guys want to plant? And the overwhelming choice was a money tree. So that's not going to happen. And then sometimes it's like, we'd really like to plant bananas. Well, that's not going to happen up here. So we'll go in with seed catalogs and, kind of guide them a little bit. It seems like purple potatoes are really popular. All the different colored carrots are popular. Beets, lettuce, kale, chard, and then strawberries are super popular. Blueberries, and at some of the schools we have herb gardens.
Nice. Yeah, children's tastes are different than adult tastes, so I imagine it's an interesting choice process. Are they learning about our local seeds? I imagine they're learning quite a bit about what they'll be able to grow
themselves. I think so, and then most of them go home and start a garden at their home. So, and then, help their parents in the gardens and whatnot. So yeah, they love it. I mean, it's just so much fun when you go out there and see the kids in the garden. It is. I don't have kids. And so when we first started it, I thought, do kids like getting dirty? And it's like, the answer is yes, they really do. Once we, shoveling the dirt into the raised beds is the most favorite thing to do.
So the fourth graders are planting seed in the spring and tending to it until they're out of school and they're coming back in the fall as fifth graders and harvesting it. And are they taking the tomato plants home over the summer or
how we are, don't really how are they do the tomato to? Plants because those are going to require a lot of care in the summertime.
So what happens during the summer to the garden? There must be some care and maintenance. Do the kids come back on summer school or project basis?
Some of them have some summer projects going on, but the gardeners assigned to each school are coming in, and we have each of them on an automatic watering system, so it kind of takes care of itself. But we do. That's something that we need to spend more time with is tending the garden during the summertime.
Okay, I want to see one of those gardens because I'd like a garden that tends itself all summer.
Right.
That sounds perfect.
That might be a little bit optimistic, what I just said.
So how are the gardens, the consumables are being used in the school cafeterias? Are the choices changing the way that kids eat?
I would like to think so. I think that a lot of them didn't know what some of the crops were not familiar with it. And, once they grow it themselves, then there's such ownership in it and they really, really enjoy eating it. And one of the kitchen staff told me that the way they get the kids to eat vegetables, whether it's out of the garden or not, is to say, this came from, your school garden. Then it's like, okay, this is really cool. I really want to eat this. So I think it is. I mean, that's was really important to me is to change the eating habits of our children, with the high rates of obesity and early onset diabetes and, to really have them eating healthy food, healthy organic food.
Michelle, how are kids in Sandpoint? Are they generally healthy eaters or do you find that they could use a little education on healthy eating?
I think that, you know, this is really an informative project for them. I think nationwide, you know, including Sandpoint, that it is a problem that we're facing, unfortunately.
And I wanted to ask whether you were thinking at all about the First Lady's initiative working with children and healthy eating.
Isn't that amazing? I keep thinking that I should write a letter to the White House saying, hey, we're here in Little Sandpoint. You know, I don't know if I'd get a response or something, but she's doing amazing work, you know, raising awareness of this.
Who knows? We might get a visit from the
there
First Lady.
There you go.
Pretty neat.
So, yeah, it was interesting. The Day of Hope, I don't know if you were familiar with that on the fall, where we had a bunch of different services, you know, for people in need. And I was the team leader of the Plum Organic Station, which Plum, they have smoothies, you know, which is the smoothies we had that day. I think that they were some type of fruit, sweet potato, and something else. And the kids, you know, we had samples there, and the kids that were coming in, they loved it. They were like, these are awesome. The adults, the look on their faces were like, this is the last time I'm going to eat one of these things, you know? So it's interesting. If you get them early, you know, maybe you're going to have an impact. And like I said, they all have gardens at home as well.
What do the parents think of the project? Do you get much input from the parents?
We do. We do. They really like it. I mean, they're really supportive. And there was one parent that we were on with the corn kids, and their dad was there, and he was just like, you know, since this garden project has come in, my kids have been so helpful with their mom, with the garden, you know. So I think the parents, anytime you give some attention to a child and say, you know, you have value, whatnot, I mean, it really raises their self-confidence. They all are working together. We don't see any signs of bullying at all. The younger kids are being helped out by the older kids. So I think anytime you know, take the effort to really work with these kids on a one-on-one basis, then it's just really, really a positive thing.
It sounds like a great opportunity for some transformation of lives. Any interesting stories come out? Anything?
Yeah,
that's
a good question.
That you can share with us?
I was just thinking of one. I'll try and keep it as anonymous as possible. But at one of the gardens, we had two children that were doing some damage to the community garden, pulling out some plants. And so they were assigned by the principal to join garden club, which was pretty much a fate worse than death, you know. And it was like the first time they came there, they had no interest in it. And I had some big bags of potatoes. I think they were purple and red potatoes. And I gave each of the children one of the bags and said, you know, harvest them. And they were having so much fun. It was just like a treasure hunt for them, you know, and just the smiles and whatnot. And so at the end of garden club, this is when we still had garden clubs, after school, we usually ask the kids, what was your favorite thing about garden club? And the number one answer is, well, usually worms and shoveling manure are the two top ones. You know, I have Team Strawberry. He wants to be on Team Strawberry. No, we all want to be on Team Poop. So that was their favorite thing. And then strawberries are a close second. And so I go around and ask each child, you know, what was your favorite thing? And those are usually the answers. And then somebody says, you know, everything. And then everybody else says everything after that. But these two kids that, you know, were assigned to garden club said their favorite thing was meeting all of you, meaning all of the adult volunteers. So it still just gives me goosebumps, you know. So my husband was a juvenile probation officer, and I was teasing him that I was cutting into his caseload. Yeah.
But it seems like they're developing another early life skill.
Right. So it's amazing, you know, just the little, just, you know, tiny, planting a seed, what all this has, you know, contributed to.
So are they working with some of the other back end? Are they composting and learning about the things that go into the prep for the garden in the off season?
We have compost bins at some of the schools, and it's been successful in some ways not. They would collect the waste at the cafeteria, but sometimes a lot of paper cups were getting thrown in there, and you know, it's kind of hard to manage that. But they are learning about composting. And then Gray Henderson, who is our liaison with the Gardeners Association, is an expert in soil, so he's teaching the kids, you know, how to, you know, have nice soil in your garden, and you know, if we need to add certain things to it. So yeah, we try and touch like on all of the, I wish there was somebody from the Gardeners Association here that could really explain in detail about what they're exactly teaching the kids in the school. So since they've taken over, which was about 3 years ago, I'm not there at the schools as much. I'm pretty much just raising money now in the awareness of the project. So otherwise, I don't know how I would run around to all these schools and get those.
Yeah. So tell us a little more about the money end. That always interests people, I think. You mentioned a couple of funders earlier, but How much effort is put into fundraising, and how's that going?
Right. The first one at Northside Cal, the Community Assistance League, started us out. I think it was $500, so we got all the equipment that we needed. They really got us going, and they continue to support our garden project. And then PAFE gave us enough money for a hoop house so that we could grow tomatoes and bell peppers and things like that.
Who is PAFE?
Panhandle Alliance for Education. And then Equinox, after we got Northside up and running, I wrote a grant for Equinox, and they gave us enough money to put in one at Charter School and Kootenai. And then I go to Cedar Hills Church, and we have a five-minute like connection time when you turn around and talk to somebody. And I met Bob Hike there, who is a member of the Elks, and we started talking about the youth projects that we were involved in. And he said, you know, you should come talk to my board about at the Elks about your garden project. And so Brenda Woodward and I went there and talked to some of their board members. And within the next week, I think they wrote a grant for us for $2,000. And so we got that, and we were able to come in and put one in at, that was Washington. And the grants that we get from the Elks have to be involved. It can't just be, here's a $2,000 check. So they build all the beds. Del Goff, who's our project manager, build beautiful beds. And so they come in, you know, build the beds, do everything that we need to do, put in the automatic watering system. And then so they gave me $2,000 the following year for Farm and Stidwell. And then we just got $2,000 for Sagal. And if I don't get the current grant that I have submitted for Southside, then I think we'll do Southside next year.
So a little bit of money goes a long way. And
right.
That money sounds like, pardon the pun, seed money to get you
exactly,
up and going.
Exactly, exactly.
And once installed, so for next year, you won't need $2,000 to run a garden at Sagal, for instance.
No, no. And like I said, we do have that, you know, money that Vicky raised from the bike. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like putting in at Farm and Stidwell, it's usually one thing is usually an obstacle at each garden. You know, it's like, it's never that easy to just like, okay, put the raised beds over there. So at Farm and Stidwell, we had the hardest time looking for a location that was close to water and not, you know, next to the soccer field where the balls and the basketballs are going to be coming into the raised beds. So I was thinking at one point, you know, this is not going to happen at Farm and Stidwell because we just could not find a location that was cost effective to be close to water because we couldn't spend the Elks grant to just trench a water line in, and then we wouldn't have money for a raised bed. So we finally located a location, but it was several, oh my gosh, maybe 100 feet or so, probably more than that, but we had to tunnel under the concrete and the asphalt to get there. And we thought, how on earth are we ever going to do this? So Three Amigos Plumbing stepped in, and they brought their huge equipment out. I don't know what you call that thing. And the kids, that was just, oh, my gosh, so much fun. So they donated it, and they trenched a line under it to us, for us, to the garden. So it's like just people coming in. I always think I kind of get, like, concerned or worried or anxious about, are we going to have enough money for this? And somebody always comes through, and, you know, individuals, you know, send me money, and Cal individual members send me money. And so it always seems to come through.
It's really interesting. I think all of us gardeners have a hard time deciding where the garden should be. In my own home, I've got one area that's frosty kind of early, and that's where the garden was. So I'm thinking of moving my garden. Are the children, were they involved in understanding about the placement of the garden? A little bit at least?
Yeah, or? Yeah. We usually go out and take the kids out and say, here's where we're going to put it, you know, because mm-hmm. here's some sun right here. And so a little bit, you know, the final decision comes down to Matt Deal, the maintenance director. But yeah, he's been really, really, you know, just so helpful for us in picking good spots.
So with a long-term vision in mind, the question many grantors ask is, how are you going to sustain it after the initial input of money and enthusiasm? And how do you keep this going, both in terms of funding, keeping the community organizations together on board, the enthusiasm level?
Right, right. Well, we're going into our seventh year now, so we've got it down pretty good where it doesn't take that much money, and we are saving our own seeds now. And I've been going out and, you know, continue to do presentations and whatnot to, and, you know, go on the radio, stuff like this, so that the community is aware of what we're doing.
Okay. Well, if you're just tuning in, this is 88.5 KRFY, and this morning on The Morning Show with Phil and Julie, we're talking with Michelle Murphy from the School Gardens Project. We're going to take a short music break, and then we're going to come back and hear more about not just the gardens, but also the wonderful experience for the volunteers and the kids who get to enjoy the gardens. But for now, we'll listen to a little bit of the garden song.
Mm-hmm.
That was The Garden Song by David Mallett.
Real nice.
We think very appropriate for the day. You're back on The Morning Show with hosts Phil and Julie, and we're talking this morning with Michelle Murphy from the School Garden Project. We've been hearing some wonderful stories about how the gardens got into place and how the kids are enjoying it, and a little bit about the parents, but I want to hear a little bit more about what changes you're seeing in the parents or how they're engaging. How is this impacting the families?
That's a good question. We see it primarily at Northside because the parents are involved in volunteering and helping with the garden. So I think it's, you know, something when we first started at Northside, it was just a real foreign kind of concept. But now I think the parents are really engaged. I don't know about the other schools where it's, you know, part of the curriculum. So it's during the day. But, you know, when we were having the After Garden Club, when the parents would come to pick up the kids, I mean, it was just such joy on their faces. And the kids would be, you know, grabbing them and saying, you know, come see what we did today. And they're just so, so supportive and, you know, just thanking us so much for what we're doing. So I think that it's the parents, I certainly appreciate what we're doing.
Yes, and moving forward, do you think the kids are encouraging their own families to have gardens beyond elementary school?
I think so. Yeah, there was one girl that was saying that they started a garden at home and their dad was watering it. And she was like, you're watering it too much. You know, it's turning yellow. So they're kind of teaching, you know, their parents. I'm sure a lot of the parents have gardens of their own and did so, you know, long before we started this program. But, you know, for some of the kids, I've heard stories about how they're teaching their parents about, no, don't do that. And no, this is what you're supposed to do. So
that's pretty neat. Kids like to be able to teach parents,
exactly.
I think.
Exactly, yeah. And then I see the older kids teaching the younger kids too, which is exciting. And I did have one student at the middle school, I think I mentioned, that went to the library with me and helped me do a presentation at the library for a lot of the younger kids.
So it sounds like they almost have homework, or at least extra credit for them, perhaps.
Right.
Are any of them coming back now that you've been doing it for 7 years and they're going to high school locally? Are any of them coming back as student aides or volunteers?
I haven't seen that. You know, a lot of them were second graders when I started this, and now they're grown up and they're in high school. And so we haven't had any interest at the high school
there
or middle school.
Maybe there's room for a high school extra credit for one of the classes that's
right
in the field.
I'm writing that down.
Yeah.
I haven't been taking notes during this, but I'm going to have to listen to this again and see.
If John Hastings is listening, I think some of his students
Nancy
would do really
Hastings
well.
Has been amazing at All Seasons in supporting this. So, yeah, maybe John would be interested in that. We'll have to see.
I'm interested in knowing, were you, Phil, and Michelle, were you gardeners as children? Did you have parents that taught you to garden?
Not at all.
We did a little bit, but not a whole lot of gardening.
Right.
When I was a kid. I started really when I was an adult and finally settled down a bit here in North Idaho about 12 years ago.
Yeah, and then the learning curve was a little bigger.
Right.
I gardened with my mother as a child, and then I left it for a long time. I wasn't a gardener, and I'm starting up again, and I just wish I had continued because I've forgotten some things.
Right. No, I couldn't even keep house plants alive. I'm a transplant from Southern California, and I was a lawyer in California, and I came up here and kind of semi-retired. But I think that the key thing was meeting Lois Wythe, who taught me how to garden. And so life has taken a completely different path.
She was a great resource, and we have a lot of great resources in this area, and it sounds like you've tapped into a lot of those. I know that's how I learned formally and informally through many folks here who either offered classes or peers or just chat with somebody at the farmer's market about what's working.
Right.
It seems like it's a very sharing community.
Oh, absolutely. And Diane Green at Green Tree Natural, she's one of our advisors, and she helped us get started. So if I have any questions, I can just call up Diane or visit her amazing farm. So, yeah, people have just, there's a wealth of education.
It really takes a community to raise a garden as
it
well
does,
as kids.
It does. So, and I'm happy to see that the community garden is so successful as well. So,
I'm drawing a visual map of the areas you've described. Are there any on the west side of Bonner County over into the Priest Lake, Priest River area, down around Blanchard maybe?
The Bonner County Gardeners Association is interested, I think, in going to Priest River. I don't know much about the school there, but they do have some interest, and then that would expand their membership as well. And I just got a call from one of the schools up in Bonner's Ferry. I believe it's Mount Hall School up by the Canadian border. The Bonner County Gardeners Association is expanding to Bonner's Ferry as well. So this might be a really good project for them to take on to kind of get off the ground.
That might change your thinking about what can be planted and when. You'll have a few different climates, microclimates,
won't
you?
There's so many different microclimates in Bonner County, so each school is unique what they can and can't grow. Some schools can grow chard. You know, some schools have so much sun that they can grow corn. Others don't have that, so it just really depends on the individual school and their location and the location of where we have the garden beds, too, how much shade they get, how much sun.
Mm-hmm. And the timing, you might have, instead of zones one through however many, it might be pre-spring break and post-spring break plantings.
Right. That's why we wanted to get the sago garden in quickly, because it's like we're already planting right now. I mean, the dandelions are blooming, so it's time to plant potatoes. And so, you know, I think that they're getting started on that right away.
Are you doing any early season greenhouse work or hoop house work?
We have a hoop house at Northside. And so we do some in there. And then Gail has one of those domes, Gail Burkett. So she does, you know, starts in there as well. But that's something that, you know, if we could do it economically, we know with the electricity, you know, so that's something that we'd like to look into. And I know that Diane Green has got a new hoop house or greenhouse that's up and running that doesn't use, I think it's based on water, is regulating the temperature. So yeah, I think that could be, you know, there's been some, you know, conversation about, okay, how do we take it to the next level here? So we just have to, you know, the school is already supporting us by paying for the water. And so we can't, you know, rely on the school for electricity. So we'd have to find a way that it would be sustainable and effective.
Yeah. Do the kids see the hothouse? Are they able to see what happens in the hoop house?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're in the hoop house. So I've got some great pictures that I'll send you of the kids in the hoop house. So yeah, it really is the kids. Like I said, we just give them some guidance. But the kids are really the ones that are deciding, you know, this is what we want to do. This is what we're doing.
But the focus is all on edibles. There's no crafting material or medicinals or landscaping plants.
No, we have some herb gardens. We have some perennials. We have some fruit trees, things like that. But it is pretty much just on food, just based on food.
I know we've planted over time things like marigolds in amongst the tomatoes because they supposedly all do well together and help
and
with
keep the
insects
away.
Down and
right.
So some companion planting. And
right. We do some of that with them. Yeah, we teach them that. So,
well, yes, the difference between an organic garden and a non-organic is huge. And
right.
So if they're learning about organic gardening, I imagine there's quite a bit that they could learn and hopefully take with them.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was fun last year. I'm just thinking about this. Northside did a bean garden. And so then as a fundraiser, they had like little packets for soup. So you could buy a packet and take your soup packet home. So that raises money like that. And at charter school, what they do is referring to, you know, how do we keep this going? Is I think that they do a raffle for the pumpkins. Pumpkins are really, really positive. Really, you know, one of the favorites. And it's a fun project at Green Tree Naturals. I was just talking about Diane Green, where the kindergartners at Northside come out and, or she goes to the school and they plant pumpkins and then put them in the window. And then they have a field trip once they get, you know, to the correct height and plant the pumpkins at her farm. And then come back as first graders. They put their name in a little name tag next to it. And then so they follow the vine through the pumpkin patch to find their pumpkin. And it's like, you know, these little tiny kids that are, you know, like with these huge pumpkins that are as big as they are. So, and then some like the little pumpkins, but that's a really fun project too. So there's all different kinds of things you can do with something like this. We just have to rely on Phil for some more ideas.
I've got another one. It sounds like one way to extend it through the school year would be to look at drying and canning and preserving. What do you do with the food when you have a big harvest and it's more than you might consume? Although that probably isn't a problem.
That hasn't been a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at one time, I think when we first got started with Northside, when we were growing so much lettuce, I think it was the floating restaurant actually purchased some of the lettuce from us to serve. So, but we haven't had a problem with, you know, getting, I think that we could grow more actually. So, and most of the schools other than Northside have 5 raised beds. Kootenay has a couple more. And then at Sagal, we did 6 raised beds. So it's never been a problem of, you know, do we have too much food? And if we do have too much food, the kids will take it home or we'll give it to the food bank.
The food bank's a great resource for the community. And
well worth
supporting.
Absolutely.
And are the kids learning the difference between annuals and perennials? Are there some specific perennials that they've been able to enjoy? Or
yeah, absolutely. That's a good question. They do know the difference. And then, you know, we will harvest the seeds for the annuals. But we have some crops like asparagus, berries, strawberries, things like that, that they know will come back year after year.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Well, it sounds like a wonderful project. Tell us some of the highlights over the years. What has really thrilled you? What sustains you? What keeps you going?
I think that it's just seeing how much these kids just really enjoy it. I like to see that they really have changed their eating habits. You know, a lot of them have. And just how much fun they're having. I mean, it is just so much fun to go and watch these kids, you know, and they work so hard. Like I was saying, I don't know if I said this earlier, but at Sagal, we had 11 yards of soil dropped off. And I thought, this is going to take us forever. You know, and they just get in there and they are shoveling and they are having so much fun. And I just love to see the way that they work together too. You know, I mean, you see, hear so much about the bullying and whatnot, but you have the older kids, you know, taking the hands of the younger kids and showing them what to do. And we have some kids that have special needs and other kids are, you know, helping them in the garden and helping them get around. And so that's just been a huge joy for me to see that. And also to just see how the community has said, you know what, we want to step in and do this. And so I think that the community is becoming aware of the needs that are out there with the kids and the need for food that our children, you know, is a big issue in Bonner County. I'm also on the board of Food for Our Children, what the need is out there for kids to have access to healthy food. And, you know, if you start these kind of habits when they're younger, then hopefully that will continue into the future. You know, you see, you know, some of the fast food restaurants and you know, the cafeterias and pizza here, pizza there, and you know, maybe this will give them another option.
Yeah, and it's a good habit to get into. I find in my garden I need to do a little bit every day, or at least a little bit every other day. How often are they in the garden? What does it look like the week, the school week with the kids?
I think it depends on the season. You know, what time of year, like right now we'll be getting into the gardens and doing all the early crops, so it's going to be busy in there now. And then it also depends on the school schedule. You know, we can't interfere with the testing and whatnot, so it just really depends on what projects the children have chosen to do.
Sure, but is it like an hour blocked out, or they wouldn't spend
it
a whole day?
It will be one of their, no. It would be like one of their classes. So they'll go in and the gardeners will go in and explain, this is what we're going to do, this is going to be our lesson, this is what we're going to learn, and then they'll actually go out to the garden. So it will be one of the classes, either the entire class, you know, the section or a portion of that.
So it's like North Idaho physical education. Instead of climbing ropes, you're in the
right
garden,
you know, I mean, they get a lot of exercise out there too. And then when they're not planting, you know, sometimes it's, you know, for the most part we don't want this, but running around and, you know, just playing and having fun outside. And you know, you don't see that a lot of times with all the electronic, you know, things that we have now. So yeah, just getting them outside, and they're out there, you know, regardless of the weather. It's like when we have something planned, they're going out there and they don't mind, you know, if it's raining or if it's cold or, you know, so
it's a nice break from school, from sitting in the classroom. I think that would really work well together.
Right. And the teachers that are assigned to it, you know, I really give them a lot of kudos too, because they have so much on their plates, but, you know, they're willing to do this and, you know, really develop the curriculum and share it with other schools.
Do the teachers get involved, or do they just take a break during the garden?
No. They're out there. You know, when we put in a garden, it's like, okay, which teacher is going to volunteer to do this. So there's usually a lot of interest, you know, usually from two teachers or what it's going to be. At Southside, which is, we're still waiting for funding for that garden. There's every single teacher there. Jackie Johnson, the principal, you know, sent out an email who wants to be in charge of this, and every single teacher there wants to be involved. So I was there the other day for something else, and all the teachers were, you know, when are we going to get a garden? So hopefully we're getting close to that.
Well, I think there's nothing more that speaks of community and springtime and rejuvenation than the image of a child playing in the mud and growing something too.
Absolutely.
It's just a wonderful thought. We're running a little low on time here. Any last thoughts for us, Michelle? Any last questions, Julie?
I think we covered a lot of ground here. I think we got just about everything in. They were great questions. You really got me thinking about a lot of things now too.
No pun intended. or maybe it was.
Well, again, here we are at 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported radio, community radio for the North, and we're just finishing interviewing Michelle Murfreys, and she's with the Edible Schoolyard Garden Project, and what a great project it is. I want to thank you for joining us today, Michelle.
Oh, thank you for having me. The time just flew by. I was like, how are we going to fill up 50 minutes about this project? So,
I don't
great
think that's
questions.
A problem. Thank you for coming in today, Michelle. We're going to send Michelle out with a song by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Teach Your Children, and then Julie and I will be back with some community calendar and other event-related stuff. Have a good day. Awesome. Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, teach your children. We've been listening this morning to Michelle Murphy talk about how to teach your children about gardens, and we're back, Julie and I, with some talk about what's coming up and what's happening here at the station and around town. And let's start with the community calendar, Julie.
That's right, Phil. Here's the events calendar. Let's think about tonight. Not that much going on tonight. We have trivia night at McDuff's, 312 First Avenue North. That starts at 7 p.m. You can arrive early for the best seating. And then Wednesday, we've got Lift a Pint for the Panada. That's at Idaho Poor Authority at 203 Cedar Street. They're hosting Lift a Pint for the Panada from 4 p.m. until 8 p.m. Join your friends at the IPA to celebrate spring and raise money for the historic community-owned Panada Theater. Enjoy great Goose Island brews, live music, complimentary appetizers, and raffle swag. Again, that's sponsored by the Panada Theater Committee. And then coming up also on Wednesday, we've got Magic Wednesday at Jalapeno's Mexican Restaurant. That's every Wednesday with resident magician star Alexander. Thursday, we've got the Goat Hop Ale Redo and Winter Tracks Volunteer Celebration. It's spring. To celebrate, come to McDuff's Brew Hall at 220 Cedar and hoist a pint of the by now famous Goat Hop Ale. Help the Friends of Scotchman's Peak Wilderness toast the season and toast the volunteers who made the FSPW Winter Tracks program so successful. That celebration begins at 6 p.m. Come one, come all. Bring a snack to share. That sounds fun.
Should be. Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Friday, we've got, the Wine Festival at Sandpoint. The Festival at Sandpoint is taking the annual wine fundraiser held at the Bonner County Fairgrounds to a whole new level this year. The event features an unlimited tasting of more than 150 premier wines, a five-star dancing experience, top-notch musical entertainment, and a special selection of silent and live auction items up for bid. To top it all off, the 2016 festival lineup will be announced. You can go to festivalatsandpoint.com. And then let's just move on to the weekend. There are a couple of more items, Phil. On Saturday night, we've got 30 Spring for Sandpoint, and local merchants team up with nonprofit organizations to bring Sandpoint Spring for Sandpoint, a day to celebrate our vibrant community from 10 a.m. until 5:30 p.m., and what we will have are participating stores offering sales and specials, as well as a variety of activities. In addition, we can enjoy product demonstrations, food, beverage samplings, mini manicures, chair massages. That's from 11 a.m. until 3 p.m. Join Creations for Kids activities, as well as boat building with Captain Dan at Northwest Handmade. A portion of the day's shopping proceeds will be donated to participating nonprofits. Celebrate spring, enjoy beautiful downtown Sandpoint, and support your local community charities. Again, this is sponsored by the Sandpoint Shopping District.
And we have a really big event coming up next week to benefit KRFY, the Little Smokies Bluegrass Band. Fresh from their first place band competition win at the Telluride Bluegrass Festival, are coming to the Panada on May 6th. They're performing a very special KRFY Community Radio Benefit concert. You can get tickets at Evans Brothers Coffee, Pedro's, Ike Arts, here at KRFY by calling 265-2992, or you can go online to panada.org. That's the Little Smokies, along with their special guests, Doug Bond and Terry Ludeker, Friday, May 6th at the Panada.
I can't wait to go to that one, Phil.
It should be a lot of fun.
I know
it. I know I've got a few friends coming. And speaking of things coming up, do you want to talk a little bit about what's coming up in the next two morning shows?
I sure do. So tomorrow, April 27th, you'll be joining Chris Bessler and Susie Prez on the Wednesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show, and it's going to be the Election 2006 interview series. Guests will be candidates for the Bonner County Commissioner's District 2 seat, Todd Sudik and Jeff Connolly. That's on at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. That should be really interesting. And Thursday, April 28th, tune into the morning show at 8 with Jack Peterson, and that one is to be announced. So it'll be good. We'll find out more tomorrow. And finally, we could mention one last event. Nope, we won't. We'll just
next week on Tuesday, if you'll join us again for the morning show, Julie and I will be back with Dennis and Webb from the Selkirk Outdoor Leadership and Experience. That about wraps it up here for us today. We had a great time talking with Michelle Murphy from the School Gardens. As always, if you heard only part of today's show and you'd like to hear it in its entirety, you can tune in the next couple of days to the podcast by going to KRFY.org, which you can also do to hear us live and streaming at any time. We're going to take you out with a little song from the Little Smokies to get you ready for the concert next week. That's all. Goodbye.
Bye, Phil.